is Dr. Toby Watson, and his website is drtobywatson.com. Dr. Watson, are you with us?
I am. Thank you for having me.
Well, thank you very much for joining me today. We have talked previously, and we talked probably about the same thing, about drugging children. And there is some concern now that you wanted to address about the drugging of the children of the people who are attempting to immigrate into this country, correct?
Correct. I think that it's newsworthy right now, and I think it's on everybody's mind right now because they've been hearing these cases, these horrible stories of young children being separated, you know, and right or for wrong that they have to be. But and that's not the real tragedy here. I think the even larger tragedy that's happening is that we are not only causing some, trauma, or I should say maybe the parents are causing trauma by, bringing their children here. But now, once we take these children into custody, protective custody, we are finding that there are reports coming out now that we are drugging these children with psychotropic medications. Mind you, these medications carry, international drug warning labels talking about that they will cause people at a higher rate to commit suicide, to become aggressive, to commit violence, have, irritability, to not think clearly. And so we're putting these young children who are coming into this country, taking them, they're already traumatized, they're already sad, and because we don't want to deal with that aftermath, we're drugging them. And we're drugging them against their own will because they can't give informed consent. The parents aren't giving informed consent because they're nowhere to be found because they can't even link the kids up to the children. And we're not getting a court order to do it, which would be the standard, if they were American citizens, before you can forcibly give somebody a psychotropic med, you'd have to get a court order saying that there's an absolute need for it. But instead, we're finding that these kids are coming out and giving reports. CNN reported on this. Some other centers have also reported on it. The kids are coming out saying, I don't know, they told me it was a vitamin. Clearly not a vitamin. It's a psychiatric drug. And so we're finding these reports are coming out, and these are from treatment facilities that are federally funded. Billions of dollars are going into these treatment facilities, like the Shiloh Treatment Center of Houston, which where there were some recent allegations. There's a lawsuit right now pending, where, again, they're giving these mind-altering psychotropic drugs to these kids to really silence them, to make them more amenable so that they don't cry, so that they're easier to handle, they're less, they're more docile, and the consent is completely out the window. And again, this is what they used to do in psychiatry and in my field, mental health, a long time ago. The Soviet Union did it to, silence people who were against, communism or against the political, agenda. We saw it happen again where psychiatrists were involved when Nazis, were coming around with the Jews. They went after the mentally ill first. And here we go now, we're going against the most vulnerable population, young children, who aren't even American citizens, who don't even understand what is happening. This is the first exposure they've ever had to us, and we're drugging them against their will.
Now, one of the things that you said that struck me was that these are federal facilities. Now, the federal government is one of the biggest consumers of Big Pharma. They do this through the military and now through drugging these children. That's pretty incriminating.
Correct. I mean, the Office of Refugee Resettlement, so the ORR, contracted these facilities and they've indicated there's serious, records of wrongdoing. They already know there's these major records of wrongdoing, from sexual abuse to physical abuse to, again, giving medication, the wrong medication, wrong dosing of medications. The Huffington Post reported on this, relatively recently. And what we're finding is even in the last few years, since 2015, we've had over 8,000 complaints to the state and federal legislators about these facilities. And mind you, this isn't like a small, drop of money. We're talking about this is a $26 billion a year private practice or private psychiatric hospital market. And the vast, two of the biggest players are getting the vast majority of that funding, which are handling these children that are coming into the country. So here we have billions of dollars going into some private industries who are having tons of reports being made of wrongdoing, and yet they're still, the legislators are still allowing them to operate. There's been a few where they get shut down, you know, they'll close a hospital here or there, but for the most part, they're operating without, you know, very little oversight, very little regulation. And now with these children, again, we can't even find out the information about how much medication are they giving them, who's authorizing this medication, what legality, how are they even doing it? I mean, there's no consent. I mean, this is absolutely abuse, you know, to children to be doing this, especially when we don't have any real reason to be doing it. We're giving antipsychotic medication to children, which is off-label. Again, why you would give an antipsychotic medication to a young child who just went through this trauma, the only reason that I can come up with would be you just want to silence the child. You don't like hearing them scream. You don't like hearing them cry. You want them to be little zombies so they just follow orders.
Now, I understand, too, that a lot of parents really just want to save their children and bring them to the United States and leave them because they want them to have a chance where in their own country they would not have an opportunity. And I'm pretty sure that parents, if they knew, if these parents knew that their children were going to be subjected to antipsychotic drugs, that they would reconsider. And you also mentioned that this has been going on for a very long time. So it isn't just something that started in 2016 after Trump was elected. It's been going on for a long time. And I'm not a Trump fan.
And you're exactly right in that it has been going on for several administrations now. It's not a Trump issue. This is an issue that's been going on for a long time. In some regard, I think it's probably a good thing that it's come to light now. I mean, maybe not the way it happened, but at least it's coming to light and it's getting news attention now that, hey, we've been doing this as a quote-unquote a government for decades, and that's absolutely abuse, and it's not right to be doing it. I gave a lecture twice now down in Mexico, in Mexico City, to one, the Congress, and then the second time to the Senate. And it's amazing to me how much little information is getting out to the masses down in Mexico. And they're trying to enact legislation to protect children from pharmaceutical companies and trying to create laws that put a little more restriction on some of these medications. Right now, it's very little legislation down there. Their equivalent to their FDA doesn't have the safeguards that ours do. And even ours, obviously, is lacking significantly.
Oh, absolutely.
But, yeah, I think these migrant, people coming here who are trying to emigrate here don't understand what is in store for them. They don't realize what is happening. And it really is sad.
Well, you've also given testimony before the FDA about the situation and about drugs. So it's apparent that the representatives, senators and representatives, and the people, well, of course, the FDA is kind of a swinging door between big pharma and big business. And
you're right.
Is that true?
Right. I mean, correct. I mean, people who work for the FDA can actually still work for big pharma companies. So in one sense, they say they put on their big pharma hat and say, okay, I'm going to promote drugs. I'm going to research drugs. I'm going to be a team player. And then the next day they go to wear their hat and say, okay, now I'm the FDA and I'm protecting against the other company who's paying me, you know, the same amount of money, maybe more, maybe less. That's a total conflict of interest. It should never be allowed, but they do. And keep in mind, we're not talking about like, oh, we gave little Billy, you know, an antidepressant or one medication because he was sad and this is going to correct something. There's no chemical imbalance. There's no genetic predisposition. This is simply a behavioral control through chemical restraint. And it's not just one medication that is being given most often. It's actually, there's studies showing that usually it's two or three or more medications. In fact, in a 2013 study in polypharmacy in psychiatry, a review, they found that the cumulative toxicity by polypharmacy increased that vulnerability to adverse effects, which again is kind of a no-brainer. It's like you give a child, you know, three, four, five, And there's reports coming out now that one child that just was recently released from one of these holding facilities were on 10, upwards of 18. They don't even know, but it was somewhere between 10 and 18 different medications. That is absolute abuse. There's no way possible. Again, I've studied neurology. I've studied psychopharmacology. I've been admitted to the court system numerous times as an expert in this field. And I can tell you unequivocally, there is absolutely no way any doctor can tell you what is happening to an individual's brain on any specific manner when you're giving somebody 10 different psychotropic medications. That absolutely should, to me, should be medical malpractice. Understanding I'm not a medical physician, I'm a psychologist who has an expertise in this, psychopharmacology outcomes.
Right. Well, and you're the former chief supervising psychologist for the state of Wisconsin Department of Corrections, correct?
Correct, at Cal Moraine Institution, one of the prisons there. And then I helped as a state training coordinator for the entire state in conjunction doing training on, quote-unquote, mental illness and crisis de-escalation, which we did with the National Alliance of Mentally Ill, of all places. But with NAMI, I coordinated together with them as we were doing that. And I've been, again, researching and lecturing upon this for, it's almost coming up on 20 years probably now. And I have given FDA testimony, written testimony, on several different occasions, specifically on, with antidepressants, causing an increase in suicidal ideation and completed suicides. Again, the idea is that take the 12 mostly widely used antidepressants, and let's say I have 1,000 depressed people. I divide them in half. I give half of them a placebo, a sugar pill. And I give the other half one of the 12 mostly used antidepressants. What two things am I going to see? One, I'm going to see depression go down in both of them. And I'm not going to clinically be able to differentiate the two, meaning that both of them are going to reduce their depression. And you're not going to see any real clinical difference between the two. Placebo works as well as these antidepressants. But what I will see is, let's say you have, 500 in the one group, and let's say you get, three suicides in the placebo group. What I'm going to see in the other group is a threefold to sevenfold or even tenfold increase of suicides, meaning that I'm going to have not three, I'm going to have maybe upwards of 30 suicides in the antidepressant group. And that is a controlled study showing the causality, meaning these drugs cause the people to become suicidal. So again, there's a lot of, researchers, medical providers out there, as well as, people like myself, who've reviewed this research and have seen it and said there's absolutely no reason, to really be using these antidepressant medications. If anything, we should probably be giving placebos again. But keep in mind, when people start that medication or when they stop it, it's very dangerous. So anyone listening right now, they shouldn't say, oh my God, I should just get off this stuff. If you're taking it, talk to your medical provider, talk to your, counselor, therapist, someone. And again, you got to make sure that you're working with somebody as you're, tapering off or trying to come off it, because it can be very dangerous to do it.
Right. Now, I did have a friend that was on Prozac for quite a long time, and she tried for 6 years to get off. And one day she woke up, she had what turned out to be Bell's palsy. And I don't think that she was ever able to successfully get off of Prozac. And I think since the creation of Prozac, the introduction of Prozac, it has just gotten worse with so many other products that have come to market. And I think during the 1990s, things just took a big change, don't you think? With the laws.
Right. Prozac was the first antidepressant, which is called an SSRI, selective serotonin reuptake inhibitor, that hit the market. That was the first one. And it was made by Eli Lilly. And you're right, it hit the market in the 1980s. And when Prozac hit the market, they had clinical trials. But what they found when they reviewed that, when I say they, I mean independent researchers, that it had a 600 to 1200% increase in suicidal ideation and actual suicides. That means sixfold to 12-fold increase. So if you have, compared to the placebo group, let's say you had 10 over there, you're now going to have 60 to 120 suicides in the other group. And mind you, Prozac carries 8 drug regulatory agency warning, warnings and studies citing the effects of violence, aggression, mania, hostility. And none of this really kind of became well known until actually a colleague of mine, Harvard psychiatrist graduate, Dr. Peter Bregan, he wrote a book called Talking Back to Prozac. And
yes,
that's what led to the U.S. Veterans Affairs Committee to hold some hearings and invite him as a keynote, expert in 2010. And you can even YouTube that and see Dr. Bregan give that testimony to the U.S. veterans. And he goes through these studies that show clinical studies, controlled studies showing that these antidepressants will increase, not decrease, the rate of suicide and suicidal ideation. And there's not just one or two. There are lots of these studies showing that it's causing violence and suicide.
Right. I've read most of his books, and he is terrific. And in the study, in the Prozac study, there were under 300 people that actually completed this clinical study, and yet they released that on the world, literally.
Yeah, correct. When you take out all the, yeah, they started with a lot more, but ultimately it was less than 300 that actually completed the full course and were able to be included actually on the Prozac. And that, yeah, that small number of less than 300 ultimately led to, I think it was tens of thousands or hundreds of thousands of prescriptions in the first year. And obviously, you know, since then, you know, I would imagine probably millions of prescriptions. And then when their patent comes due, you know, after 10 years, they tweak it a little bit. And actually what Eli Lilly did is they literally came up with a new diagnosis with, again, psychiatrists make up diagnoses. They don't find or discover them, like, you know, through autopsy or pathophysiological tissue. We have a vote, and we just raise our hand and say, hey, we're going to call something ADHD. We're going to call it bipolar. We're going to call it major depressive disorder. And it's totally subjective. And one year it could be a disease and a label, and the next year it could not be. But what they did is they came up with a new one called postpartum depression. And then when they came out with a label and said, well, we're going to label this and make it a disease and we're going to say that there's this problem, guess what? Eli Lilly had a drug hit the market immediately, and it was called Seraphim. And Seraphim, if you look at it, is a nice little pink pill. And guess what? It is Prozac. That's all it is. It's Prozac, which is blue, and they make it pink, and they called it Seraphim, and then they said it's for, you know, for women who, you know, get sad and depressed after, you know, having a baby, which, hello, that's just about everybody. And because of that, they were able to continue making that, and nobody could make it on a generic version for another 10 years. And that allowed them to just reap even more benefit, you know, by having that under a new, under the new patent. So again, it is a big business. It's a game that drug companies play. And unfortunately, you know, people are paying the price because they're being told misleading information. They're told that it's genetic. They're told that it's a chemical imbalance. They're told they have to be on it for life. Right now, the American Psychiatric Association is telling people half of the U.S. population will be mentally ill at some point. Half all the listeners they're saying are going to be mentally ill and have to go on medication.
Because of these made up, diseases in the diagnostic statistical, what is it called, DSM?
The DSM, which is the Diagnostic and Statistical Manual of Mental Disorders.
Right.
Keep in mind, the chairperson who is in charge of that book, and they come out with new editions, they're on their fifth edition now, the fourth edition, which is the one right before we've been using, the chairperson of that, Alan Francis, Dr. Francis, was called the most important psychiatrist in the world at one time. I've talked with him. We've had him lecture with us at our conferences. We combined with UCLA one time. And even Alan Francis wrote a book called Saving Normal, because when he saw the next book come out, he said, okay, yeah, this has gone way too far. We're taking normal behavior of kids and adults that are just normal reactions, and we're labeling it, we're pretending it's medical, and we're drugging people unnecessarily. And it's simply just a book, a dictionary.
Amazing. Okay, we're going to go to a 3-minute break. We'll be right back.
such a problem. But our guest the second hour is Dr. Toby Watson. His website is drtobywatson.com. And just as horrid that the government is drugging these children with multiple drugs, just the whole idea of medicalizing normal behavior is just awful. I don't know what else to say about it, but that is what they've done. And what you've indicated, that they've medicalized normal behavior and have created all of these diseases so that people can make money.
Well, and that's exactly right. You know, and if we had great mental health outcomes here in the United States, you know, there could be a counter argument saying, well, but we have the best medicine in the world. We have the best outcomes. But unfortunately, we're actually ranked one of the worst in the world. There was a study done by UNICEF some time ago. We ranked 25th out of 29 places for general well-being for our children. You know, we basically have only 5% of the world's population, but we use six times, I should say we have six times the number of, you know, child mass shootings. It's 31% out of all of the violence. And if you've noticed, out of these mass shootings, every one of them has been taking a psychiatric medication known to cause suicidal ideation, suicide, homicide, violence, aggression, irritability. And so we're talking about, you know, a lot of kids that are being placed on these meds who ultimately end up being ticking time bombs. And there's a lot of controlled studies showing that this is what's happening. And so the problem is that we don't have good outcomes. We got worse outcomes. In fact, when I went to Mexico and gave those lectures, I pulled some data even from Mexico, and a lot of these kids are coming from Mexico. And for youth in Mexico, about 8 out of every 100,000 ultimately will commit suicide. But then if you look at the U.S., it's about 18.2, and it's the leading cause of death for our youth right now is the suicide. However, we have six times the amount of income that we spend on our kids and trying to help their kids. So if you kind of ask yourself, why do we have, you know, the U.S. has half the mental disorder rate of Mexico. It's got the highest amount of mental health and drug intervention on the planet, bar none. We use more drugs than anybody, even close. We have the second highest income level for children out of anywhere on the planet. And yet we have the highest suicide rate, the highest homicide rate, the highest amount of violence. We got the most shootings. And we're actually ranked almost at the exact bottom of world mental health for our children. And it's really a kind of a cultural and structural violence is what we call it in, you know, sociology. We have programs set up to funnel our kids into programming, meaning, you know, screenings and then go see your doctor, then getting on medication, leading to violence. And that is a structural violence. And it comes all the way from the government by having these types of screening programs. And for a while, they were trying to mandate it where you had to have screening done. New Mexico passed legislation not that long ago, HB 53, which banned that. It actually stopped it, which was good.
We've got a break. We will be right back and talk more about these screenings. Right back.
Welcome back. This is Deanna. And our guest, our second guest today is Dr. Toby Watson. His website is drtobywatson.com. And we're talking about Prozac. And there was a hearing right after the Joseph Westbecker shooting on September 14th, 1989. He'd been taking Prozac. And the FDA had to have a hearing, and this was held in 1991. And by 1990, people had already filed lawsuits against Eli Lilly over Prozac, and it's linked to suicide. And their internal documents showed a link between Prozac and suicide back then. And but they kept it hidden. Correct?
Yeah, that is correct. And that's just one case, you know, with one drug company. And this is kind of, happening with all these drug companies where they change the data, they hide the data, they manipulate the data. Doctors are not being told accurate information, and when doctors do get the information, they often, you know, are told by the pharmaceutical reps, and they're minimized. So they really don't see the horrible adverse effects. And a lot of doctors, again, you know, they're pressured to see patients, you know, back to back as quickly as possible. I actually was treating a few of the medical practitioners of a large agency because they were stressed, because they didn't feel like they could actually, you know, provide the care that they really wanted to provide, and how the care has changed over the decades. So it really is sad. And we shouldn't be surprised that we have these, you know, migrant children coming across the border, and we're finding out these reports where we are, as a government, I should say, or these centers are forcibly drugging these children, you know, for purposes of control. It shouldn't be a surprise when this happens on a massive scale that we're dehumanizing these children, because we're doing it to our own children here.
Oh,
Medicaid,
absolutely.
Medicare kids, you know, are being drugged at a massive scale. And you know, I hate to say it, but there is a poverty piece to it. There is a race piece to it as well. There's lots of studies that have shown that if you are a foster care child, all things being equal, symptom severity, type of diagnoses, guess what? You're getting more medication, and you're getting higher doses of that medication. And we're going to also give you even worse types of diagnosis, more severe diagnoses. So these kids really are the most vulnerable. They've been separated from their parents. They've got a whole host of things going on. And rather than have compassionate care for them and allow them to process, which is normal, the way they're, you know, processing this, we're stumping that and saying, no, that's not allowed. That's too painful to talk about. That's too painful to cry it out. That's too painful. We don't believe you can handle it. We don't think your ego can handle it. You got to take this pill. And then we tell them that they have a disease. It's got nothing to do with all this stuff in their life. It's, you know, the ADHD bug. It's the bipolar bug. It's this thing inside them. And they have to take drugs for life. I mean, they're robbing them of hope. They're robbing them of their spirit. They're robbing them of their internal locus of control, where they know that they can, you know, manage themselves. And that to me is probably the worst atrocity, when it's done for the benefit of the quote unquote the victim.
Yes, and that's also applicable to children in the system who are taken away from their parents for one reason or another and placed in foster care. Those children are also given a lot of drugs, from my understanding.
Correct, yeah. I mean, it's an epidemic. I don't know if people realize this, but, you know, right now, one out of every four or every five, depending on what group you're looking at, in America, I'm talking about all people, take a psychotropic drug. So look outside, 1, 2, 3, 4, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. Someone is taking a psychotropic drug. And usually, often it's not just one, it's multiple. There was a study done in 2006, I think it was. And they found that 60% of the time, two psychiatric drugs were being prescribed. And in 33% of the time, three psychiatric drugs were being prescribed. Mind you, a child walks into a medical office for any reason, like absolutely any reason whatsoever. One out of every 10 kids is walking out with a prescription for a mental condition. And in 25% of those kids, they didn't even have a mental health diagnosis. They just gave them a psychiatric drug for some, and they thought, oh, he's having a little anxiety, or not, well, that would be mental, a little sleep disorder, you know, which isn't really a mental diagnosis. Or maybe the parent just says, you know, I feel like, you know, he's just always bouncing off the walls. He's just, you know, he's always going for it, but he doesn't meet the criteria, the checkoff list, that subjective list for diagnosis. The MD still gives him a drug anyway, and they walk out. One out of every 10. Mind you, they did a study back in 1990 and said how many of those kids would get a mental health referral to, you know, like a specialist, like a psychologist or a counselor, or, you know, somebody that's going to look at this other than just from a medical standpoint. 90% of them got a referral for a mental health, quote unquote, specialist of some sort to work with them. They did the study again, same person. This is the past president of the American Psychological Association, a colleague of mine, did the same study in 2000. It had dropped to 10%. So at that point, they were walking out with meds, and they weren't getting a referral. And if they come in with a mental health issue, 90% of them walk out with a drug. So if you go to a medical provider with your kid, you got a 1 in 10 chance that he's going to get a med, regardless if he's on, if he meets the diagnosis or not. If you go there for a mental health issue, you got a 90-plus percent chance he's walking out with a drug. And you got less than a 10% chance, or about 10% chance, he's actually going to get a mental health referral. That is absolutely unacceptable. But that's what's happening, and that's why now you see these immigrant children coming in. They're going into these centers that are paid for, these housing centers like the Shiloh Treatment Center down in Houston, where all of a sudden they go in there, and all of a sudden they start immediately medicating these kids, subduing them, and now it's coming out. And we find out about the restraints they're doing. We find out about the past, you know, deaths that are happening in these centers where kids are having asphyxiation because they restrain them because they say they're too out of control, killing these kids. And yet even after all that, they're still taking millions and billions of dollars from our government to continue to operate.
Now, are these privately owned facilities?
These are privately owned facilities that are major corporations that own, you know, hundreds of these facilities around the country, and they are hugely funded. I mean, the vast majority, I should say a huge portion, I shouldn't say the majority, but a vast portion of their funding comes from the Medicaid, Medicare, usually Medicaid office, and these contracts that they have. Keep in mind, the Hartford Courant did a series going back a ways, and they found that there was 142 psychiatric restraint deaths that had occurred over the prior 10 years. Many of them were children. And they estimated that between 50 and 150 of these deaths occurred every year across the country. So we have psychiatric facilities that do restraint. They're giving these harmful drugs out. It shortens their lifespan. It increases the aggression, increases the suicide rate. And ultimately, people are dying. And we guise this under the idea that, you know, the greater good, that this somehow is justified because we say, like, well, but some people are helped. Yeah, you got to break a few eggs in order to, you know, make an omelet. It's like the end does not justify the means. If you have a child who's just been separated, coming over the border, and he is distraught and crying and angry and upset, you don't get to drug them and then say, now, look, he's subdued. He's so much better. And say, see? Therefore, it was helpful. No, that doesn't justify it.
There's also another population, the prison population, where I'm sure a lot of drugs are used. Correct?
Correct. Yeah. In the state of Wisconsin, we're using millions and millions and millions of dollars. And I forget the exact number, but I want to say it was upwards around $18 million a year on prescription medications. For inmates, because, you know, inmates, one, obviously have a lot of mental health issues, but two, they often want to just be subdued and, also just want to sleep their time away. Some of the most, abused medications in prison are the benzos they try to get for, you know, just kind of numbing themselves, and also like stimulant medications where they can actually get a high from taking like Ritalin or Concerta or things like that, which are basically class two narcotic medications. That it's kiddie cocaine, you know, that's why they call it kiddie cocaine, and they snort it and get high from it.
Wow. And then we already mentioned the military.
Yeah.
And there's, what is it, 22,000 suicides a year in the military because of psych drugs?
Correct. And I had gone out to the Veterans Administration Committee on Health twice in the past, maybe 5 years. It was part of Bernie Sanders' group when we were looking at why were 22 vets per day killing themselves in suicide. Mind you, these weren't vets returning from combat either. These were just vets that were, you know, never in combat. And what they found was that the increase in antidepressant medication had skyrocketed. And I said, it's a statistical absolute certainty. Again, the more people you put on these medications, it increases the rate of suicide. So if you put more of them on, you're going to get more suicides. And that's all it was. That's what they were finding. It was like, look, we're adding more meds to these people and we're getting more suicides. So then we add more meds thinking that we, you know, will reduce the suicide rate by giving them more meds. And they were basically shooting themselves in the foot by just continuing the problem, not realizing, hey guys, wake up. The thing you're doing is making it worse. And so finally they've started to listen, and now they're starting to implement different alternative programs prior to doing psychotropic medications. And keep in mind, I'm not like, you know, against meds, I guess in, for any religious reason, for any, you know, personal conviction reason, you know, I didn't have any bad experience with it or anything like that. This is basically saying, look, this is about informed consent. This is about letting people know that they're not being given the truth about these meds and what they can and can't do. Again, there's lots of people who have a bad day at work. They go home and they have a few glasses of wine and they feel a little more relaxed, and it, you know, it lets them off. But nobody tells them they have a chemical imbalance. Nobody says they have to have that wine. Nobody says that, you know, it's going to be good for them. It's not going to kill brain cells. That's informed choice. You know, a drug dealer on the street corner will give somebody, you know, some marijuana or some cocaine and say, hey, here you go, try it. I'll give you free samples of it. And they might say, I feel great after taking it. You know, it's been a horrible week. My wife just left me, or who knows what's going on. And they'll feel wonderful. That doesn't mean that they had some sort of problem. And if they stop taking it, they may go through withdrawal reactions. They may go into detox, discontinuation syndrome. But nobody lies to them and says, oh, see, told you, you need your medication. No. And in that regard, that street drug dealer is more ethical than often the doctors, who then will tell patients they have to take it for life. They need it. It's a chemical imbalance. And when they stop taking it and they rebound, the docs end up saying, see, told you you need it.
Oh, right.
What they're not telling you is that you got addicted to it and that you are going to have a tough time getting off of it.
Right. Now, it used to be that in the military, people that they thought had psychiatric problems were not accepted even in the military. And now it seems that they are giving all these medications out. And what do you say about that? It's a terrible thing.
Well, you're right. I mean, that was, I mean, go back, you know, 10, 15, 20 years. Yeah. When you were given a psychiatric, label, a diagnosis, it carried a little more weight, because at that point it meant you couldn't maybe pilot, if you were taking psychotropic meds, or you couldn't hold certain government positions. Now, because of these anti-stigma campaigns, they try to normalize, like, it's like, you know, you should be allowed to do anything if you're diagnosed bipolar or with schizophrenia, or if you're taking, you know, five medications. That is absolutely absurd to me, because we know these medications impair neurofunctioning. We're stopping the brain from functioning, and usually a lot of them impair the frontal lobe, which is that higher executive functioning. This is what makes us human compared to other animals. We have compassion, empathy, you know, we do decision making, and all of that's getting impaired when they are taking these medications. And this is why, you know, we have like inhumane behavior from a lot of people when they take these medications, because it's impairing that. So the government, though, was realizing that there's so many people taking these drugs, you can't find people to go in the military if they're not on meds. And then you get the lawsuit saying, well, this is a medical disorder. This is a disability, which is why our disability rates are skyrocketing and we're going bankrupt, because everybody now has a mental disability and they can't work, they can't process. And so now it becomes a lawsuit. Well, you didn't hire me because I have this disability. So the government had to start taking people. And so we have now people who are heavily tranquilized, medicated, you know, taking
and
uppers
and
downers,
gun.
And then teaching them how to kill.
Yes.
Yeah.
Great.
That is a major concern. That is a major concern. And then we look and say, gee, I can't imagine why these people are committing mass murders, why these people are shooting people on, you know, military bases. Well, we've known this for a long, long time. In fact, you had mentioned the prison population. One of the early studies was done up in Canada looking at taking certain psychotropic medications. And what they found was that there were over 1,000% increase, a tenfold increase in violence when they started taking, I think it was the benzodiazepines at that time, in the prison. So they would give, you know, certain inmates these drugs, and then they would track them over time, and they found they became more violent. And then another study came and another study came. And again, these studies are out there. People have to just go find them. There's a great one by Glenn Mullen and Moore that was able to the FDA.
Yes.
Yeah, they went to the FDA and said, let's just pull all the study, all the drugs on the market. Let's look at everything. There was over 4,000 medications that are currently out there. And they said, you know, there's certain meds that cause people to become violent and get reported as an adverse, you know, reaction. And what they found was a disproportionate number was all psychiatric medications and accounted for like 76% of all of these homicides, all of these violent acts of aggression. And they were the stimulants and the sleep meds and the ADHD meds. And they found that, yeah, these meds are causing the vast majority of all these people to do it. And understanding that only represents 1% maybe reported to the FDA. You actually figure out then and do the math. Yeah, do the math. You're talking about tens of thousands and literally hundreds of thousands of acts of violence every year because they're taking that medication.
Yes, and most people don't report adverse reactions. They don't know that they can.
Correct.
The other thing, too, is that talk therapy is not paid for by your insurance. But if you go to a psychiatrist... hang on, we'll
pick
this up on the
most inside. Most insurance is covered. We'll pick it up when you come back.
Okay, be right back. All righty, welcome back, Diana. And our guest this hour has been Dr. Toby Watson. His website is drtobywatson.com. Let me rephrase what I said right before the break. If you're a psychiatrist and you are doling out psych drugs, you're going to make a heck of a lot more money by just having medical appointments where the people just come in to check with whether their drugs are doing okay, than you're going to make if you're going to spend an hour with somebody chatting with them, correct?
That is absolutely right. And they've actually done studies on that showing the amount that they'll make. And we're talking like, imagine tripling your salary. So, and mind you, doing psychotherapy or counseling can be very hard and taxing because you really get to know them, or you should really get to know them. And you do give a piece of your humanity to them. So it's painful work to do that sometimes and to be there with them. And when you just do med consults, you really don't have to get into the deep sickness of it. You can kind of say, well, you know, any side effects, any of this, and they're in and out. And med consult, you know, 10 minutes, 15 minutes maybe if you're lucky. So it's a lot easier on the ego or on your emotional system to do it. So path of least resistance for many psychiatrists, although there are, you know, still some very ethical psychiatrists out there who don't diagnose. They try to, you know, only work with psychosocial type interventions, and they're doing excellent work out there. But unfortunately, it's very, very rare that you find that.
And really, as far as diagnosing, you just look at the symptoms, and then you look in the DSM and say, oh, this is what you have, because you really don't take a blood test or a urine sample or something like that to make a diagnosis.
Right, and even the language that it's become so commonplace, but even when you were saying it, you said, like, you know, it's, you look in the DSM and that's what you have. You can't have it. And it's improper English, remember. You can't have ADHD. You can't have bipolar any more than you can have Catholic. I don't have Catholic. If I'm Catholic, I'm Catholic because I do and don't do things. I believe or believe and don't believe things. So for that reason, these are phenomenological concepts. These are subjective labels, like socialism. So if you think of it that way, the way you get labeled is I say things or don't say things. I do things or don't do things. I think about something or don't think about something. I feel a certain way or don't feel a certain way. So if I meet that subjective cutoff list that they come up with, you know, five of these or two of these for 2 weeks or four of those for 4 weeks, you are labeled ADHD, but you can't have it. It's improper English because it's not a real thing. You can't cut it out. You can't see it. There's no normative data on anything. There's no chemical imbalance that they can measure. So it's not a real thing. And in that regard, I always tell people when they say, well, I have bipolar, well, you can't have it. Just like if I kneel, if I believe in Jesus Christ, if I go to mass, if I believe in God, if I get confirmed, if I do things or don't do things, I'm labeled Catholic. But I would never say, well, I have Catholic. that's just improper English. But in our society, they've really indoctrinated people into the idea that your mental states are somehow a disease if we don't like it. Mind you, homosexuality was a disease, an actual chemical imbalance at one time.
Amazing. Well, thank you for clarifying that. That really does make a lot of sense. Thank you for being on the program. And let's pray for these children. Speak out about it. Thank you so much.
You're most welcome. Anytime.
Bless you for doing what you're doing. Bye-bye.
Thank you.
All righty. We'll be right back.